This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Arnold Golden and Gregory.
Welcome to Energy Matters, a show about how you can save money on your utility bills, use technology wisely, and live a more sustainable lifestyle. Here's your host, veteran energy regulator and clean energy expert, Commissioner Tim Echols.
Thank you, Scott Slade. It's always great to be saving money on that power bill, using technology wisely, and living a more sustainable life. Hey, I'm coming to you from Paris. I'm sitting in the home of the U.S. ambassador here with my new friend, Dr. Young Liu. He is from the Argonne National Lab, and he's been there 45 years. Dr. Liu, welcome to Energy Matters.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Dr. Liu, how did you wind up working for the Department of Energy and working at the Argonne National Lab?
Okay, I went to Massachusetts Institute of Technology for my graduate study. I was originally from Taiwan, and I got my bachelor's degree in nuclear engineering, and I came to United States in 1973, and I went to the graduate program at MIT Nuclear Engineering. And then after 4 and 5 years, after I graduated, got my degree, I joined Argonne National Lab, and I've been there ever since.
Dr. Liu, I was just in Taiwan. Our listeners heard me interview Angelica. We talked about the LNG coming into Taiwan, their closure of nuclear plants, and all the scooters, the 14 million scooters in Taiwan, and just the tenuous situation that Taiwan is, sitting 100 miles from the mainland. So you stayed here in the U.S., and you were working at Argonne National Lab after getting that MIT degree. What were some of your duties that you can talk about in public?
I can, because 45 years working at DOE's first national lab, for me as a nuclear engineer and after graduate study, and I have not regretted a single day that was the right choice, because at the DOE National Lab, Argonne is a multi-purpose national lab. And if you think in terms of energy, you know, even in the nuclear area, you have fission, which is my main activities, and I've also been in the fusion. I've been into the fossil energy. I've been to all kinds of energy-related programs and projects. And of course, this in the United States, nuclear has gone through. The year I came out of MIT was 78. But 79, we had Three Mile Island. And 1986, we have Chernobyl. And we saw that nuclear is basically finished, I mean, in the United States. But then it came back, right? And then 2011, we had another Fukushima, and we're still back, right? And
Dr. Liu, I've often said that we cannot afford a catastrophic nuclear accident every 15 years in this industry and expect to survive. And, you know, I'm the vice chair of the Georgia Public Service Commission. I did the motion in 2017 after the Westinghouse bankruptcy to keep going with Vogtle. We're now done with Vogtle 3, about to be done with Vogtle 4. How important do you think it was for Georgia to finish Plant Vogtle?
I think it's very, very important. If there's anything about the baseline nuclear, which Vogtle is, it's a large plant. I mean, granted that it takes years, to build, I think with Georgia leading the way, that speaks volume. This is after 30, 35 years since the last, right? Nuclear power plant came online, and this is the new one. So I think it's very, very significant. And for me, having to live through the cycles, right, ups and downs, and then to see both Vogtle come online and also all these activities related to the small modular reactors, micro reactors, and you know, different sources of nuclear hydrogen and all of those.
Dr. Liu, we're in France, and the French seems, despite being, you know, a socialist country and different than us, they have been able to just continue on with their nuclear energy program, with reprocessing, with MOX fuel fabrication. How is it that they have been able to keep public opinion on their side and continue to dominate the world from a nuclear engineering point of view?
Well, here's something that I often wonder, because when you look across the countries that started with the nuclear, and France, also Japan, and also United States, but to this question, I think it probably has a lot to do with the citizens' understanding about how important, you know, energy source like nuclear, you know, means to the country, because we're really talking about energy security, right? And if you are a country endowed with natural resources, you know, like coal, like, you know, all these other non-nuclear part, I can understand, and the public reactions to the accidents, right? So I think when it comes to nuclear, there's always a mixed feeling about the peaceful use of nuclear and also the, you know, the other side.
Dr. Liu, did it surprise you after Fukushima when the Germans decided to divest of all their nuclear plants and just began closing those and just continued to just be really on a tirade against nuclear, adding, you know, more wind, more solar, more batteries, more trading, more aggregation? I mean, they've done, I think, a good job of powering their country now despite closing these plants. But did it surprise you that some of the best engineers in the world would abandon nuclear energy?
It certainly does, because I would think that energy security for any nation, you know, that's something that you have to take that to heart. You know, where is the energy security coming from? And given each country's situation, either you have, you know, natural resources, or you got it from someplace else, right? The way I look at it is that I think it's nuclear has to be in the energy mix. I have nothing, you know, against the other sources like wind power, like solar, like anywhere you can get the energy from, right? Because modern society without electricity, you know, there's really, in the winter, you know, you need to heat the house. In the summer, you have to keep the house cool. So, yes, Germany. I have friends and colleagues in Germany. I look at the situations where Germany reacts in a certain way, but look at Japan. Japan is the only country who got bombed, you know, during World War II, right? But they did not give up nuclear. Even after Fukushima, for 10 years, they shut down all the plants, but they are bringing them back.
Wow. Well, where is the Argonne National Lab? Tell our listeners, many of them may not know.
Well, Argonne National Lab was established in 1946, right after the World War II ended. But before that, you know, it's the Manhattan Project, right? Argonne, the genesis was the metallurgy laboratory. And before that, the first chain reaction is 1942, and that was, you know, conducted by Enrico Fermi. You know, all the scientists that came, you know, to the United States. So Argonne is really the birthplace of nuclear for you know, peaceful use, right? And but the chain reaction also make people realize that you can build a weapons, a bomb, you know, out of it.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking to Dr. Young Liu. He's originally from Taiwan, but he's worked at Argonne National Lab the last 45 years. And you guys know how I love Taiwan, and what a great country Taiwan is. What a great relationship America and Taiwan has. Dr. Liu, just a couple of more minutes left in this segment. What are some of things that you're most proud of from your 45 years at Argonne?
What I'm most proud of is I've been involved in from the first day when I joined Argonne, I was working at the front end of the nuclear fuel cycle because U.S. at the time was interested in building advanced nuclear reactors. So that means the mixed oxide, means the metals, means the carbides. I was even involved in the Kings River project because the U.S. at the time was going to build the first fast breeder reactors. But then that was got canceled. Then I worked on fusion for a number of years. So all my years at Argonne, I have never strayed far away from my root in nuclear, be that fission, be that new fission. Also, my specialty is materials. So when you think about nuclear or fusion, is what's the materials? It's the fuel. It's the cladding, right? That's where the fission reactor takes place. And also in the back end, you know, once it becomes a spent fuel, becomes a high-level waste, you got all that nasty stuff that you have to deal with.
When we come back, more conversation with Dr. Liu about front end, back end, why maybe we aren't handling the back end of the fuel cycle in the U.S. like they are here in France. We'll talk a little bit about French nuclear and the conference that he and I are going to, the World Nuclear Exhibition. Find out a little more about the great work that Dr. Liu has done at the Argonne National Lab. This is Tim Eccles from Paris, from the U.S. Ambassador's House right here in beautiful Paris, France. You're listening to Energy Matters. Hey, Tim Eccles here for GEM Car Wraps, G-E-M Car Wraps, this fantastic group out of Brunswick that do wraps on vehicles, jet skis, golf carts. They've got it on my vehicles, so check it out, GEM Car Wraps on Facebook.
Gas South believes in the difference we can all make, like the difference in putting people first and showing that you care. For us, our difference is saving people money with our best rates and no deposit, and the difference we make in our community by taking care of our friends and neighbors and giving back 5% of our profits to help children in need. Learn more about what makes us different at GasSouth.com. Gas South. The difference is good.
Logan Booker, producer of Energy Matters, here for Better Tomorrow Solar. Imagine a world powered by sunlight. Imagine your home powered by sunlight. Better Tomorrow Solar has a passion for helping you see this for yourself. Better Tomorrow Solar can install your solar panels at no upfront cost. Build equity in your own home rather than paying the utility company. Find out more at BetterTomorrowSolar.com. That's BetterTomorrowSolar.com and see how you can make your world better.
This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Arnold, Golden, and Gregory, an AmLaw 200 law firm with 180 attorneys in Atlanta and Washington, D.C. They take a business sensibility approach when advising clients. They provide industry knowledge, attention to detail, transparency, and value to help businesses and individuals achieve their definition of success. AGG subscribes to the belief not if, but how. We thank John Gornall and all the attorneys and staff at AGG for sponsoring our show. Hey, Tim Eccles back in Paris at the U.S. Ambassador's home. Dr. Liu, let's just start with these beautiful furnishings and this beautiful house. How cool would it be to live here?
Wonderful. I will quit my job at the instant I get a chance to walk in a place like this.
Yeah, you could have this wing over here, and I could have that wing over there.
And we'll do podcasts all the time.
We're having a good time here. Dr. Liu has worked for 45 years at the Argonne National Lab. Dr. Liu, I've been on the Public Service Commission now 13 years in Georgia. I'm 63. I'm not going to ask you how old you are, but you have had a wonderful career. We're in France, where so much of this country is powered by nuclear. And Dr. Liu, you'll remember this better than me, but during that oil embargo back in the 70s, I am told that it devastated France and that they came out of that and said, never again will we be brought to our knees regarding energy. We're going to make our own. Is that right?
Absolutely. Again, I think each country's situation is different, right? Doesn't surprise me when France has a nuclear fuel cycle from the front end to the back end, all cover. And they are the only country, I think Japan may be another one, that from the get-go had the reprocessing idea in mind, had the fast breeder reactor in mind, because they realized that even if they go completely nuclear, the limitation is uranium resources, right? They don't have uranium mines. And also in the end, not in the end, but that's where the breeder makes sense. Right, you basically creating fuel, you know, from uranium and the mixed oxide, and then you need the reprocessing capabilities.
What Dr. Liu is talking about when he's talking about the front end, that's the fuel going into the reactor, but the back end is the nuclear, the spent rods that are coming out and what you do with them. And Dr. Liu at Plant Hatch, which you've been to in Georgia, and Plant Vogel, we have moved the fuel, spent fuel, from the pools in some instances, the really old fuel. We've put it into highly engineered cement cask, and we've taken it back on the backside of the plant, and it's sitting there waiting on the U.S. government to come and get it if the U.S. government ever creates a policy.
Yes, and I'm very familiar with that and also deeply involved in that part of the research as well, because in the spent fuel, when you take it out of the reactor, first you have to put them in the pool for them to cool down to a point where you can take them out and put it in dry storage. And then the question is, dry storage for how long? Is it like 40 years? Is it like 60 years? But eventually, the spent fuel in dry storage has to be moved to a repository, to the final resting place. And then transportation, you know, is how you get the fuel, you know, to the repository.
I have postulated, Dr. Yu, that because the Germans were moving their fuel, and it was controversial when it was coming down the road or on a rail, and people were picketing, people were blocking streets, you could see the fuel. And this has not really happened in America that much. I mean, yeah, it's happened a little bit, but it's not like our fuel is leaving Plant Vogel or leaving Plant Hatch on trucks with police escorts. In some ways, American nuclear is still out of sight, out of mind.
That's very true, yes. Even though we had been working on the Yucca Mountain repository since 1984, you know, when we passed the Nuclear Waste, you know, Act, but it's going through administrations and after another administration, so it seems like the pendulum is swinging, you know, back and forth. So that's how long Yucca Mountain geological repository has been going on. And then, you know, now we're looking at, you know, places where spent fuel can be moved to a consolidated interest storage facility. And NRC has issued license, you know, for, if I'm not mistaken, two of those, you know.
So really the consolidated storage is kind of a compromise position. It's kind of a temporary. And what Dr. Yu was talking about is moving it to a location, and we don't know precisely what the location would be. It hasn't officially been licensed, but it is moving forward where maybe you would have some stored in the southeast, like, for example, at the Savannah River site, or maybe at some other lab up in the northeast or out west. And it would sit there in these dry storage casks guarded, and, you know, with funding going to keep it guarded. And it might just sit there for 20, 40, 60, 80, 100 years. I'm told, Dr. Yu, that these dry storage casks will last about 100 years.
Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind. And also, they are records proven that is the case, because Some of the spent fuel or debris, you know, that they got from the Three Mile Island, after the accident in 1986, got moved to the Idaho National Laboratory or the sites and in dry storage all these years and under NRC license. And they're still, you know, there. Plus, you have many of these spent fuel in dry storage, again, at the utility site for many years.
Dr. Hughes talking about the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, if you're not familiar with that. And Dr. Hughes, one of the things that the Vogtle Project did, beside basically mature a union workforce of IBEW wiremen, welders, sheet metal workers, all of these folks that worked, but we also demonstrated that there's a regulatory process through the NRC that can work.
Yeah, both of them are very, very important because the regulatory policy and standards and also the they have all the original inspectors, you know, they do on-site. That's very important. That's the infrastructure, right? And the other part is that with Vogtle, that you had all these trained tradesmen. Another question or the concern is if you're building the next one, then you don't go to the, you know, the people who don't have any construction experience, right? I think then compared to the U.S. Plant construction capability to other countries like Republic of Korea, you know, and other countries who are actually building, you know, new large nuclear plants and here and there, and they had the workforce. For the U.S., I think right now is really the critical time. You know, hopefully Sue Vogtle, and then, you know, we leaping to, you know, these other reactors.
Just a couple more minutes in this segment with Dr. Liu. Dr. Liu, I have said to Jeff Lyash and the TVA directors, I've said this to many others, including Jigar Shaw at the LPO office, the loan office here that DOE has stood up, that we need a federal backstop against cost overruns. I mean, I feel like I've got some credibility here because I'm the vice chair of the only commission in America to complete a reactor. And our people, the Georgians, have paid the learning curve for building this. We have spent more than we should have. And what I've told DOE, Jigar Shaw, anybody that would listen, look, we need more energy in Georgia. We could build some more reactors, but I am not going to enter this process and have this thing go over budget again and cost our people even more money. The federal backstop financially, I think, is going to be critical moving forward.
I would totally agree with that. I mean, granted that the private-public, you know, partnership, I think is all the more important in the United States because we are, as you know, on the private side, companies who are into, you know, utilities or whoever, you know, building this large baseload plant, you know, it's take a long time. And also it's going to be affected by the basic electricity price. If you got other, you know, non-nuclear sources that give you, you know, cheaper price, then, you know, from the company investment industry point of view, you know, you're not going to be part of this.
Yeah, that's right. You know, we were riding on a train the other day here in France, and I was telling my daughter how much nuclear energy France has and how great these reactors are that serve this country, how proud the people are, how much, you know, nuclear energy in France might be exporting on any given day, you know, when the wind's not blowing in Germany and the sun's not shining in Germany. They have a very, I think, equitable trading system in the EU, and it works. It really makes it really makes it work. Think about French nuclear power and just how great it is for the EU is something they can be proud of. Well, when we come back, I've got to keep Dr. Liu over one more segment because there's some more things I need to ask him. So stick around. Tim Echols at the U.S. Ambassador's House in Paris, waiting on our green energy conference to start. You're listening to Energy Matters.
Everyone has tough times in their life. By checking the Project Share box at the bottom of your utility bill, you can make life a little easier for your neighbors. Your $1, $2, or $5 checkoff is matched by the utility and then used by the Salvation Army to help folks having a tough time paying their energy bills. It's that easy. Join PSC Commissioner Tim Echols and many others by donating via your power bills this year. See more by clicking ProjectShareInfo.com. And thank you.
Tim Echols, host of Energy Matters, here with Jeff Pratt of Green Power EMC. Jeff, more and more EMCs are offering solar to their members, and you're seeing it grow like crazy across rural Georgia.
Tim, you're right. Co-ops in Georgia are doing a great job of deploying solar across the state. In fact, they're leaders in the country with respect to engaging customers and deploying large-scale solar to benefit all their members.
Hey, contact your EMC and ask them about their solar energy policy, or just Google Green Power EMC.
You've heard about Gem Cars on Energy Matters. Made by Polaris in Anaheim, California, these street-legal, small electric vehicles go where golf carts are not allowed. Equipped with seatbelts, headlights, optional doors, and a tag, Gem Cars and trucks are perfect for shuttles, corporate, or college campus use. In fact, Georgia Tech has over 100 of them. The new generation Gems have many options when selecting the battery type, onboard chargers, and enclosures to suit the climate. Go to GemCarService.com to find out more. That's GEMCarService.com.
Marlin Gas Services, a subsidiary of Chesapeake Utilities Corporation, is your leader in mobile pipeline solutions for hold, peak, and backup services to meet utilities' demand schedules, and their experts in CNG and RNG transportation and logistics solutions. No pipeline, no problem. Marlin Gas Services can provide uninterrupted natural gas service for short or long-term projects, no matter the location. Learn more about how we can support your mobile natural gas needs at marlingas.com/energymatters. That's marlingas.com/energymatters.
Mr. Echols, this is Christine Turner. I wanted to tell you personally how much I appreciate you help getting our power back on in Locust Grove. We got it back on as soon as you sent the email to the president. It came back on about 10:30 Saturday night, but I didn't get home till 10:30. Staying with my friends, Diane and Johnny Dodd. I think you're friends with your mom and dad that gave you your phone number. I just wanted to tell you how much I appreciate that.
Hey, Tim Echols back with Dr. Young Liu. From Taiwan, been in the U.S. At the Argonne National Lab 45 years. Do you ever go back to Taiwan?
Last time I was back was, I would say, some 10, 15 years ago because I have no living relatives back there. Now, originally, I came from China. Okay, 1949 was the year when China became communist. But you also know there's a nationalist government. So my parents were, with the nationalist government, and they went to Taiwan. And that's where I was born and brought up.
Wow. You know, Taiwan has a 9-day supply, I was told by Thai Power, of LNG. 9 days is not a lot.
Absolutely.
I wonder, you know, as they look at closing some of their reactors and, you know, they're talking about maybe doing some SMRs one day, and they've got national elections going on in Taiwan this year. It seems like it's a mistake for Taiwan to get out of the nuclear business and kind of copycat what Germany's doing.
I always felt that's the great mistake. When you look at the Taiwan, the two party, you know, the DPP, Democratic Progressive, versus the nationalists. Nationalists, the party KNP, was always for nuclear. And when they were in the, at the ministry position, actually one of my friends, my college guys, I mean, all the way from the commissioner down to, they're all Tsinghua graduates, and they're at my underclass, right? So I think that DPP, you know, just changed that energy outlook. They feel, you know, just like in the United States, like Germany, you know, if you educate the public on the fear, on the bad side, you know, of nuclear power, and campaign, you know, use that as a campaign basis, and you have 8 years, you know, change back and forth that shows how democracy works. But in terms of the national energy policy, who got us into, or who got them into the 9-day energy supply business? If you don't have any natural resources, you know, like Japan, I mean, it seems like, why can't you just look at your neighbors?
Dr. Liu, the island is a quarter of the size of Georgia. It's not like, you know, when the Germans love to export their Energiewende philosophy, right? But, and it might work if you're a rich country somewhere and you've got plenty of neighbors, so that when you can't generate the wind and solar, you can grab some of that nuclear power next door. Taiwan has no such luxury.
Very true.
Dr. Liu, as we think about being here in France for the World Nuclear Exhibition, there'll be thousands upon thousands of people at this conference who are going to tomorrow. What are you looking forward to at the World Nuclear Exhibition?
Okay, this gets back to the how I got here. I was invited by the organizers of World Nuclear Energy Exhibit back in March. And they came to us and says, asked, and would we be interested to participate? It's innovation, okay, as a technology innovators. That was back in March. And of course, I need to get my sponsor, which is Environmental Management Office, Environmental Management, who has supported us all these years to develop innovative technology called the Argus Remote Monitoring System. We were participating in this as a member of the U.S. Pavilion. And when you look at all the other participants, they're mostly large, you know, nuclear industry company. I think we're the only DOE national lab participating in the areas of innovation. I look around and I like to send somebody, you know, to come in my place, but I basically came to realization that I really need to be here.
Dr. Liu, I'm not going to ask you how old you are, but you're older than me. And I stood behind you as we went up this ramp, as you were pushing on a little rolling cane-like device. So you have gone to considerable trouble and probably pain to get here. But you're here at what will be a very small U.S. pavilion, I can tell you, because I've come to every single WNE since 2014. And the Americans are a tiny group. The French take over the place because French technology, their vendors, their door makers, their crane makers, their equipment makers, the French have made an absolute fortune off the nuclear business.
It is a eye-opener for me as well. And I had, in my 45 years, especially the last 10 years, really working with many international partners in Europe, in Japan, in Asia. But the French, I mean, just look at the way they organized this World Nuclear Exhibit. I've learned a lot. I mean, yeah.
Dr. Liu, we're going to be going into the U.S. Conference on Green Energy. I'm wondering if they will recognize the accomplishments of Georgia today as one of the greatest feats in green energy in America. I'm not sure if they're going to. I hope they will, because nuclear energy is carbon-free and it's the cleanest baseload power that we have.
Agree with you 100%. As to who's going to bring up, you know, say Georgia on the Bogle or Argonne, you know, I mean, Dr. Catherine Huff will be here in person. if she knows that I'm here, I'm basically, you know, it's a DOE, right? National Labs. Innovation, you know?
Dr. Lou and I are sitting on this lovely pink couch here in this ante room here outside of where we're going to be speaking. And we met as we came in the door, and I had only a few minutes of conversation before I said to him, Dr. Lou, you must be on my radio show, Energy Matters. The listeners down in Georgia will love to hear you. He went to MIT. He spent 45 years, the last 45 years, at Argonne National Lab. And we're here not only at this pre-conference here at the U.S. Ambassador's Home, but we're also going to be at the World Nuclear Exhibition. Folks are beginning to come in. We're wrapping up our segment here. Dr. Lou, as you think about the future of America over the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years, what are you optimistic about from an energy perspective, from a nuclear perspective?
I'm a perfect example, right? In my training, in my experience, I think I could have gone anywhere, but I choose to stay, you know, and of course, you know, United States is my country. And as to the way that the country is heading, you know, it has, I would say, ups and downs, right? But as far as the energy of the future, as far as the nuclear in the future, certainly having seen all these cycles, I think there's some things that are not changed, right? The climate, you know, crisis and the relationship of the CO2 emission, right? And then the nuclear, the role of nuclear. So in my mind, I have no regret on why I choose this field. And all my 40 years, and people ask me, you know, how long you want to stay, you know, continue to work. I think I will continue to the point that I'm not able to, like, just get around, right?
Dr. Lou, just in our final minute here, why should the people of Georgia be proud for having completed Vogtle in these times?
You have many reasons to be proud. I think you're the first. If you think of a state, right? And think about the people, think about the plant location. And then you can ask your question, we have other states, and they're also, you know, Texas is another one, right? Why is it that in some states that, you know, you get the stuff? You are from Georgia, so maybe it was because of you.
You know, I think it's really been a great team effort in Georgia. We've got my colleagues that approved the project in 2009, the legislature that allowed Georgia to be able to collect the interest in advance, which was a deal breaker to the utility if they didn't get that, because it kept all the interest from compounding. So that saved money. The utility, the Southern Company, Southern Nuclear, exhibited great courage in the face of a Westinghouse bankruptcy. They continued. That was stunning. And it canceled our fixed and firm contract, and we had to go to a time and materials contract with Bechtel. So it has been a long and winding road.
You know all the ins and outs. You know, me as a research scientist, engineer, my focus is on the technology side.
Hey, Tim Eccles, from the U.S. Ambassador's Home with Dr. Lou from Argonne National Lab. Stick around. One more segment from France coming up. You're listening to Energy Matters.
As the Southeast's leading non-utility power provider, Cherry Street Energy energizes businesses like Porsche and Gulfstream in cities like Macon and Atlanta with predictably priced emission-free electricity. We build, own, and operate solar power plants for our partners, allowing them to deliver on sustainability promises with no complexities, upfront costs, or ongoing maintenance. All they get is a power bill, simple as sunshine. To learn more, contact us at info@cherrystreetenergy.com.
Tim Eccles of Energy Matters here for Solar Sun World. No doubt you've seen solar panels popping up all over the state. If you want the precision of German engineering when it comes to solar, Solar Sun World is for you. Gerd and all the folks at Solar Sun World understand the complexities of solar and how to make it work for you. From tax credits to inverters to accelerated depreciation, they'll advise you on the best path forward. And Solar Sun World now offers power purchase agreements. Find them at SolarSunWorld.com. SolarSunWorld.com.
Hello, Commissioner. I feel like it's very important that I occasionally let you know that I really appreciate the job that you do and your commitment to solar energy and electric vehicles. It really makes me happy, the idea of our wonderful state having more and more solar. Just, it really excites me. I really love the job you're doing. Anyway, thank you. Have a great day.
Hey, Tim Eccles back. One more segment on Energy Matters today. I'm at WNE. I've been at every WNE since 2014. And I'm going to dedicate this segment to what the French are doing with their spent nuclear fuel. Here with me, Sebastian Farin. How do you say your name in French?
Farin. Not Farin, but Farin.
Then I'm not very good with French. I wish I'd taken French in college instead of Spanish. Would help me here at WNE. Well, tell us about this ANDRE project, because it's different than the way that the U.S. was going to handle waste. We were going into rock, and the French are going into clay.
In clay.
Yeah, so tell us about that.
Yeah, okay. So in France, you know, we have a lot of power plants, more than 60, something like that. And so we decided a long time ago, 30 years ago now, to create a dedicated public body to manage waste for the long term. So today we have two main disposal facility for very low level waste and intermediate short-lived waste, which is the biggest amount of radioactive waste in France. And we have now a big project which is called SciGeo, which is supposed to manage high-level radioactive waste, the most hazardous ones, from the NPP and so on. And SciGeo is a 500-meter deep project in clay, in a clay host rock, as you said before. And the main step that we just have is that we submitted the license application of this project now. After 30 years of conception, studies, scientific studies, technological studies, we are now on the submitted license application.
Let's talk about what's happening in France, because I was at the U.S. Embassy yesterday, and in our previous segments of the show today, I featured some interviews from the embassy. The public opinion for nuclear energy in France is growing, that people have realized, especially because of the Ukrainian war, that France needs to be in control. They don't need to be subject to Russian gas. Is that right?
Yeah, it's true. I think there is a lot of matter to deal with regarding this subject. First of all, of course, we know that the war in Ukraine changed many things for a lot of countries, especially for European ones. But we also observe that the price of electricity is higher and higher, and for customers, it's very important to keep a good amount of life rate. So it's important also for French people to have a lower price for electricity. But I think there is also more and more French public concern regarding the climate change, and some of them understand that the nuclear can be a solution.
Yesterday at the embassy, they were talking about France being carbon free by 2050, 100%, using really nuclear as the backbone, but also solar, wind, and batteries. And all of that will allow France to be 100% carbon free. And in America, that's going to be very difficult for us to do. But I think France is going to surpass us in that.
Yeah, we have to say that in France we have no oil, so it's important to create some energy for us. In the very beginning of the 70s, we decided to implement a big nuclear program in France. This is the reason why we are perhaps so in advance regarding US and so on. But we have a lot of big challenges. We need more electricity now. We know that building a nuclear power plant is something very long, and so we need other way to produce energy.
France reprocesses their spent nuclear fuel, and that's certainly something we're not doing in America. So that gives you a much smaller amount of waste to put down into your clay disposal, because you're reusing so much of the spent fuel. That makes so much sense to me.
Yes, the principle is to select materials and waste. And so ANDRA is just dealing with radioactive waste, which is quite a small amount. About 4% of spent nuclear fuel is waste. And so we have to deal with a small amount of waste regarding the process. But at the very end, as we have a lot of nuclear and power plants, we have a lot of waste. I mean, SIGEO is designed for something like 80,000 cubic meter of waste, which is quite a lot. And it will be operate for more than a century. So it's a very, very huge project. From its very beginning, studies and so on, but also it will be a long process to build it and to implement the facility.
You decided to build in clay, and I'm looking at a large mock of it here on the wall, as well as a video of it. And last time I was here, you had a Lego display. Someone had built a Lego display showing how it worked. But why is clay a good idea?
So clay, first of all, we decided in the very late 80s to build a deep geological repository. In the beginning of the 90s, we... At the end of the 80s, we failed. This was another story. It was another time. So at the very beginning of the 90s, we decided to have a new step for regarding this project. And the French Parliament voted the first law regarding radioactive waste management, long-term radioactive waste management. And it decided many things. First thing, decide that such a project is not only a technical project, it's also a socio-political project. So, I mean, you need to be involved with the territory which is supposed to host the repository, because it's also a local project. I mean, you need the support of elected officials.
Let me ask you this, because Nevada in the U.S. was to be the home of our Yucca Mountain facility. And at the time that it was approved, Nevadans were fine with it. But as time went on, politics changed, and they were no longer okay with it. How sure are you that the inhabitants of this area will continue to be in support of the project?
We try to develop a strong relationship with local inhabitants, local elected officials, local companies, because we need also to give them jobs and contracts. So it's a way to improve our proximity with the local inhabitants. So first of all, we are very, very linked to the local communities. But we also are in this in this place for a long, long time. So we are about something like 200 people from ANDRA are working every day in this facility.
So there are 200 people working on this facility, and the licensure of it has been approved, or is in process?
Yeah, actually, we only have an underground research laboratory, and the license application had been submitting at the very beginning of this year, to 2023, and we hope we can begin the construction in 5 years, something like this. But we still have a lot of people working there to prepare the building of the facility, but also to work in the underground research laboratory, which is a huge work too, of course, because we prepare. We had a lot of scientific experiments. Now we prepare the facility, the real facility itself, by demonstrators, scale one demonstrators. So it means a lot of activities, a lot of employment there, and also a big point for the local economy as a whole.
So I've been to La Hague in Normandy, where there's a big room, just a floor, with little holes in it, and your waste is sitting there now. Will the waste simply be pulled out on a crane in the same exact container and taken to the clay facility and placed in there? Will it be that simple?
It seems to be really simple, and it will be like that. But, of course, we are dealing with radioactive material, so it's quite very dangerous radioactive waste. So the process will be exactly the same. We will put the canister out of the disposal facility in La Hague, and then put them in a container, dedicated container, to transport them to the SciGeo facility, which is in the east part of France. Then some of them will be just stored like that, and some of other will be put in waste packages, and then the waste packages then that will be bring at 500 meter deeps, and then put in the Oster rock.
Well, if folks in America want to find out more about Andre and the process and kind of keep up with it, what is the best website to see?
You have to link to www.andra.fr. Okay, this is our website, and then you will find everything about radioactive waste management in France, and especially SciGeo project, which is perhaps one of the most famous project in France regarding radioactive waste management.
Well, I want to thank you, Sebastian, for being on the show today.
Thank you, and have a good trip in France.
Well, if you want to find out more about this clay site, go to Andre, ANDRA.FR, and you'll be able to find out more about their short-term and long-term waste. Hey, Tim Eccles from WNE in Paris. I hope you have a great weekend. Thanks for listening to Energy Matters.
Logan Booker here, producer of Energy Matters, and I want to tell you about the Advanced Power Alliance. For more than 20 years now, the Advanced Power Alliance has been leading the energy transition in America's traditional energy states. They advocate for wind energy, solar power, and energy storage, all while partnering with traditional resources to ensure that America has abundant, affordable, cleaner energy to power our homes, our lives, as well as our economy. With the growth of solar and advanced storage and power generation technologies, every state now has the opportunity to be a leading energy state. Advanced Power Alliance is proud to partner with the Georgia Large Scale Solar Association and work with the Public Service Commission, Georgia Power, and their customers as Georgia continues to be one of America's leading renewable energy states. You can learn more about the Advanced Power Alliance at poweralliance.org. That's poweralliance.org.
Having a family member or close friend in crisis is something we have all experienced. North Point Christian Counseling can help. Whether it's marriage counseling or a loved one struggling with abuse or addiction, North Point Christian Counseling has counselors in Macon, Athens, Kennesaw, and Albany to help bring healing and recovery. To find out more, call 478-973-9358 or find them online at northpointcounseling.org. That's 478-973-9358 or northpointcounseling.org.